This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Meeks Mixed Media on the web at meeksmixedmedia.com. Also by Telos Audio Networks, the best way to hear from there at telos-systems.com. And by Violet Microphones on the web at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt.
Uh-oh, Gary Klein's back.
I don't know. Even if you go and ask for a day off, be the person that can sell whoever you're talking to.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
And along with me, Tom Ray and Chris Tobin from New York City. Plus, Gary Klein of Cumulus Media is our special guest.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
We have our couple of usual co-hosts with us and a special guest with us tonight on video. Let's say first of all, to Tom Ray from the Hudson River Valley in New York. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Kirk. Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm so glad you could join us from your amateur radio shack there in the beautiful Hudson Valley.
My man cave. It's a great place.
Man cave. Tom is the vice president of engineering for Buckley Broadcast, and they own a few stations up in the Northeast, including the flagship WOR in New
York.
And
in California. Don't forget California.
Oh, you have some there? Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
well.
Oh, yeah.
Any in Hawaii? Yeah. You know, most corporations own something in Hawaii.
I wish we did.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, sometime, Tom, why don't you come with me out to American Samoa?
I'd like that.
We'll try to sidestep the tsunamis, and we'll do some engineering. we'll have a Mai Tai at Tisa's Barefoot Bar served to us by the inimitable Candyman. We'll have to tell you that story sometime.
Just one.
All right.
Come on.
Also with us, the man who brings a touch of class to the show. Yes, he wears a tuxedo to work at CBS Radio. It's Chris Tobin. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Tom. How are you all?
Good, Chris. Yourself?
We're good. Good. Glad you could be with us tonight, Chris, from your lair in Manhattan. And Chris, as I mentioned in the chat, going to come see you in a week and a half or so. Going to get to be in New York. Yes. Actually, I arrive a week from the day. Going to see the folks at Goom and talk about audio pros. In fact, on next week's show, I should mention this. On next week's show, if I can arrange it, we're going to have the man who basically is responsible for all the high-end audio processing on top stations in France. And he's the guy who's designed the audio processing at Goom.com and all of their radio stations. Nice. If you like heavy processing, this is the guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's David Perot. So
that should be a fun show.
We'll try to have him. And Chris, understand, you're going to try to join us over at the studio at 101 Hudson in Jersey
yes.
City.
I don't think that should not be a problem. I can hop on the subway and be there in no time.
You can be on the PATH train and walk right over. And also joining us from his man cave, I think in Atlanta, Georgia, it would be Gary Klein. Hello, Gary.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good. Good. Glad to have you along. Gary is the Vice President for Engineering and IT, Information Technology, with Cumulus Radio, or is it Cumulus Media? Or, Gary, help us out here. What's your title?
Cumulus Media. Cumulus Media. But you can call it Cumulus Radio or Cumulus Broadcasting, but officially it's Cumulus Media.
Gary is one of the busiest guys on the planet. He really is. Now, Gary and I have met each other years and years ago when we were both kind of early in our careers. Gary, as I recall, I was called to come do some warranty work on an FM transmitter that a client of yours, it wasn't Cumulus, this was way before you were working with Cumulus, had bought. And you and I met on a rainy night in Indianapolis and went to the top of a big building there. What was that building?
That was the Bank One building. That was, I'm going to say, 1990. And it was, we met downstairs probably at 11 o'clock or midnight on a dark night and climbed all those stairs up there to work on that Energionics transmitter.
That's right. It was an Energionics. And, it wasn't anything that Gary couldn't have fixed himself, but the thing was under warranty. And so Gary was asking for some warranty service. And I happened to have some experience with Energionics transmitters, and I knew a little bit about their oddities or foibles or just how to tune them up because I had just done some work on one. I think I shocked myself on it. But anyway, so we went up there and tuned that thing up and got it working. And sometime about, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning, we walked away happy, I believe. Does that sound right to you, Gary?
It does. And I was just thinking, 1990, and it's 2010. 20 years we've known each other.
Oh, gosh, 20 years ago.
That's scary. That's very scary. Not because I've known you that long, just because that means we're 20 years older than when we met.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Wow. Just, yeah, a lot has gone on since then. I got to have lunch with Gary a couple days ago at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, which happened to be held here in Nashville. Gary flew up to Nashville, attended that for a day or so, and I kind of supported the folks at my employer, Telos, Omnia, and Axia. They were displaying at the convention. So that kind of prompted us to get together and hook up for this show. And Gary had an idea to make the show all about. We're going to get to that idea in just a minute, but for our listeners and viewers, I want to give you a bit of a roadmap of where TWRT is going, where This Week in Radio Tech is going. This is our 22nd episode, and we've had some requests to do a series of episodes where we explain some foundational technologies. So beginning, beginning next week or the week after, we're going to have to see how next week's show goes, but beginning within the next week or two, we're going to start a series that will occasionally be interrupted, but we're going to start a series on where at each show we cover a fundamental of broadcast technology. So we'll do a whole show on AM, amplitude modulation, how that works and how it's transmitted. We'll do a whole show on FM, just what is frequency modulation, how does that work, how's it transmitted, and how's it received. We'll do a show on digital modulation techniques, and in that show, we will also add to that some technologies that amateur radio operators use, like PSK31 and other digital modes that ham operators use. We'll also then have some foundational programs on analog audio, some of the things that make it good or make it bad, on digital audio, including AES, EBU audio transmission, and also IP audio transmission. And then we're also going to do we'll do another show on audio processing. We'll try to get more in depth with that as well. We'll also do a show on mics and speakers, so we can explain some mic technology and mic techniques, and then things that you might want to know about speaker technology and speaker techniques. So those are things that are all coming up. I think I've just covered about the next 15 shows, because in between we'll have a few special guests where we'll break from the foundation series and talk about whatever that special guest wants to talk about. We're going to have Scott Feibusch on again to talk about towers. We're going to have Skip Peasy on again to talk about whatever Skip Peasy wants to talk about. And we're going to have a few of our foreign correspondents on again, also like Andy Linton and just a few others from here. Now, Peter Smearden, perhaps from Australia. I also want to report to everyone just how wonderful it is to have listeners from all over the world. We've got listeners now in Hong Kong, in the Middle East, in India, in New Zealand. Russia, we've got a few downloads from Russia. Of course, all of Europe, including the Emerald Isle, Ireland, Germany and France and Spain, the Scandinavian countries. So just from all over Canada, we have a number of downloads from Brazil. So, hey, thanks for listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. And remember, you can always go to the website, thisweekinradiotech.com, and leave your comments there. Appreciate those of you who have already done so. Well, let's jump right into our topic, because we're going to spend a good 45 to 50 minutes on this topic now. And that's what Gary Klein is going to we're going to bounce some questions off Gary, but Gary's also going to pontificate a bit on how engineers, those who are currently employed for broadcasters and those who are looking to be employed at broadcasters, and those jobs are a bit slim and hard to come by, how they can present themselves both as current employees and as prospective employees, what we need to do as engineers to maintain our skills, improve our skills, and keep or create or save our jobs. So, Gary, why don't you kind of get into it and give us a foundation for where you're coming from on this. Why are you in a position to give us advice about the engineering profession?
Thanks, Kirk. I guess the answer that I have for your first question, why am I in a position to give advice about this, is one, I've been doing this for a long time, been an engineer for 28 years in the business, not including all of the previous years being a ham radio operator and an enthusiast and a technician. Two, I've been with our company for 10 years now, and I am responsible for a large engineering department throughout the company, and we are the second largest broadcaster in terms of number of stations owned in the country. So obviously, between engineering and the IT department, I'm involved quite a bit with the hiring and occasionally the termination of engineers or IT professionals. So understanding where corporate America is and how budgets are handled and how decisions are made from that perspective, the higher up, you know, budget perspective and how you allocate resources is one area that I'm very familiar with. And then also how to evaluate an employee and their worth to the organization or to their particular local market, and whether they're, you know, getting the job done or they're not getting the job done, whether you need to make a change, whether you need to add more staff, which we do on occasion, are all things that I'm involved with. So I guess the easiest thing I could say is I just have a lot of experience doing this. I'm not the only one, by the way. There are a lot of other folks that I could name here on this broadcast that are counterparts of mine at the other radio companies, both large and small, that also have responsibility for doing this sort of thing. And they would probably have their own opinions. Some of them, I would guess, would be the same, and others might be different a little bit. But I'm not the only one who could give this advice. I just happen to be the guy that's sitting here tonight, and I'm happy to do it.
Well, Gary, and one reason I particularly want to hear your perspective on these issues is, number one, I've known you for a long time, and I know you to be a very practical and level-headed engineer. I'm sure that you've had to make some tough decisions, you and your other management team. Cumulus is a company that has grown very, very quickly, acquired a lot of radio stations, and then combined clusters of stations here and there. You've hired some people who I knew before Cumulus, and you've had to move some of them around. And as you said, unfortunately, you've had to let a few people go here and there when it doesn't make sense to have that many engineers in a given market. So your perspective, I think, is really quite valuable on this whole subject. I'd like to start to address the notion, though, of how an employed engineer, we certainly have a lot of them listening to this podcast, how an employed engineer, how he needs to improve himself or keep up with technology, and how he needs to interact with the other members of the station management. What is it that an engineer can do that helps to keep him valuable or make him more valuable to station management, so station management doesn't have any thoughts of getting rid of this valuable guy?
Yeah, great question. Certainly a topic that probably would take longer than the 40 or 45 minutes we have right now to answer in its entirety, but I'll try and summarize it. I've written down a number of highlights on a piece of paper. Just minutes before the show, I wrote down a bunch of bullet points of those things that personally I think are important to keep your job or to be that guy, or I guess another way to put it is, if they're starting to make cuts, you know, to ensure that you're not that person on the list. And I think you answered it really when you asked the question. You said, you know, what does somebody need to do to make themselves more valuable? Well, the answer is you need to be valuable. Now, the question then is, well, how are you valuable? A number of different ways. And I have my own opinion about how you do that within Cumulus and within the engineering organization that I manage. Again, there may be other people that have different opinions about how one should do that, but I have a very good feeling that all of my counterparts would at least agree with some of the things that I'm going to say. They might actually have some other things to point out. I may be leaving something out here, but I'll run through a few of the things that I have. First and foremost, and this may sound like a really weird thing to say, but please don't make me ask you something twice. I manage 360 some odd radio stations, a software company, and a large IT infrastructure. If I have to ask each engineer in our company to do the same thing twice, it's now 730 radio stations or whatnot. And so don't make me ask you something twice. If I ask you to do something, please do it. If you have a question or you can't do it, no problem. The issue that I get into at my level is, for every email that I have to answer or for everything that I have to continually mentally put on my checklist and then go back and ask about again, is very troubling for me. You don't want to be on my radar screen in that way. So if I ask you to follow up on something, if I ask you to call somebody who's interested in tower real estate, if I ask you what your transmitter power level is running at, if I ask you to go check your streamer, if I ask you to quote out a laptop, please just do it. Please don't make me 2 days later realize on my mental checklist, which is already way too long, don't make me please ask you again to do it, because it's just adding to my workload. I absolutely love and respect all of our engineers, but the ones that always respond, that always answer promptly and don't require me to ask again or again and again, are the guys that stick out at the top of my list, are the ones that,
you know, generally are more trustworthy and reliable, the people that I can count on and the people that don't suck a lot of my time. So believe it or not, that might not be something that you think about often, but be that guy. Be the guy that's always there and always answers right away. Be an aggressive engineer. Be somebody who is absolutely – yes, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on that because, you know, in the broadcast business, a lot of times people start at small stations, which are often family run. There's not a lot of corporate culture in the stations where a lot of engineers got started. That was certainly true for me, and I'm still part owner of four radio stations where we don't have a typical corporate culture. Sure, there's mutual respect, but there's not the kind of unwritten rules that you find in a larger corporation. Now, my spouse works in healthcare, and they have a lot of, you know, pretty formalized corporate culture behaviors that they do. And what you're talking about is something that you'll find in a professional corporate, a professional environment. So it seems to me, Gary, that you're asking engineers to respond to questions from you or from other people that they may report to in a professional way. That, you know, if I ask you a question, please answer it or get back to me with the answer right away. Don't make me ask you twice.
Right. Get back to me right away. Or if you can't get back or you need to do some further research on it, or I don't know, you're out sick or you're on vacation or you're tied up at a transmitter site, just ping me back and in 5 seconds say, got your message. I'll get back to you tomorrow or the next day. Is, you know, will that be okay? And that's great. But don't not respond. Okay. And you're right. I mean, it is a corporate atmosphere. And when your boss is managing a lot of radio stations, and that might be me, or that might be your market manager who's managing 5, 6, or 7 stations or 4 stations in his or her market, or it might even be your regional engineer. In our organization, in our company, we have a handful of guys that are also regional engineers that assist me. No matter who's asking you the question, could be the sales manager, could be the program director, answer their question and respond to them quickly. Because I guarantee you, if you don't, they may turn to me or one of the regionals or to the market manager and say, you know, so-and-so is just not getting back to me. I can't tell you how many times a manager has asked me a question that I thought would be an easy question for their own engineer to answer. And I'll respond and say, well, have you asked, you know, so-and-so, you know, the status of X, Y, and Z? I mean, I'll be happy to look into it for you, but I'm sure, you know, John or Jane Doe, you know, has that answer for you. They're in your own market, and I'll get an answer back that says, I've asked, but I haven't really gotten an answer that I either haven't gotten an answer or haven't received an answer that I understand. So absolutely, Kirk, you're right. And there are differences between corporate and between local market or small, you know, mom and pop operations that all of us, I came from one. But, you know, frankly, in a small operation, let's just take an AM-FM combo in the middle of North Dakota. There must be one there somewhere. I suppose that whoever you're working with, whoever your colleagues are, don't appreciate the fact that you might not answer or get back, or you're the guy that always takes a week to respond. And so I think it probably applies no matter where you're at. It just has a different level of sensitivity. And when you are, I guess, look at it this way. Let's look at it from the perspective of the engineer, not mine for the moment. Let's forget about me. I'm in, you know, Bismarck, North Dakota, or I'm in Lake Charles, Louisiana, or I'm in, you know, Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm just making, those are markets we're in. I'm just pulling those out of my head just as an example. That has nothing to do with the people that work there. And you want to get noticed, or you want to keep your job, or you want to climb the ladder. I mean, from your perspective, it's probably very helpful, I would think, to always be the person who responds. In fact, on my note card, I made a note. I have some engineers that carry wireless devices. I've got some others that, and I guess it's across all professions, prefer not to or don't want to be bothered. My advice in terms of climbing the ladder or keeping your job, carry a wireless device. Carry wireless email if your company will let you carry it or, you know, pay for it, because you can respond at 8 o'clock at night or 9. And I know there are people that are watching this thinking, wow, that's the last thing I want to do. I'm not going to be intruded after 5 p.m. But in this climate, in this culture, in this world and economy that we work in, if you work in an organization and you want to be thought well of and you want to perhaps put yourself higher on the notch of the ladder or the hierarchy of who might get cut or who might not in a budget sense, or You know, what is my value, or will I get a raise this year or next year, and what will that raise be? My advice is always have some email near you and a cell phone, but email's a lot easier. It's less intrusive, in my opinion, and be ready to respond and respond all the time. One of the things I'm known for in our company is always responding, whether it's 1 a.m. or 2 or 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock. People know they can count on me. Now, that's part of that comes with my job and my responsibility and all of the things that I oversee. I think it's fair to say that's expected and that's what I should do. There are folks in local markets that probably don't have that requirement on them to be ready to get to it. Although, I guess if you have a transmitter problem, we all know as engineers at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to run out. But if a sales manager or program director happens to be up late at night and sends an email off at 11 o'clock at night, and you happen to be near your email and you're not sleeping and you can answer it, let me tell you, I'd answer it. You get noticed for those sorts of things. The things I'm talking about may not sit well with everybody, but these are the things, honestly, that I think help enhance your position in your organization, whether it's your local market or your regional area that you happen to be in, and then all the way up through corporate. Just an opinion. And, of course, we have some great folks on this. I was just going to say, we have Chris and Ray on this call, and they're also engineers that have a lot of responsibility. They may have opinions on that as well.
Well, I was going to say, Gary.
In fact, we're going to ask him about that. I was just going to mention, Gary, in the chat room, the comments are about 50-50, agree and disagree with your perception of employees need to get back with you. Of course, you're managing a lot of people, and I can understand. You know, I've got a couple of reports who report to me, but I know when you're managing dozens and dozens of people, and the way that you do, and as much traveling as you do, and as busy as you are, yeah, if you ask a question, you need an answer, even if the answer is, Gary, I don't know, but I'll find out and get back to you, and then do it. Hey, I stepped on somebody. I'm sorry. Was it Tom Ray?
Yeah, that was me, Kirk. That's okay. No, I just wanted to expound on something Gary said. He was talking about answering questions, and one of the things he said, you know, maybe somebody said they got a question they didn't understand the answer to, and unfortunately, a lot of engineers tend to do that because we understand how a transmitter works, we understand how a console works, we understand a logical progression for troubleshooting and everything else, and sometimes we forget that the person we're talking to, the general manager, the sales manager, the program director, isn't a tech, and we tend to talk over their heads, which is not a good thing. What you want to do is you want to bring the level of conversation down to the level where those people can understand. And, you know, that's something else that gets you noticed, because when you explain something, or, you know, when they ask you a question and you give the explanation or you give the answer, they can sit there and say, you know, I got that. I didn't get something that was blown out of proportion, blown out of the window. I got what the guy said, and I understand why we had that problem, or why it's going to cost $500 to fix this, or whatever the case may be. And that's something else that'll get you noticed, just, you know, to be able to answer the question on the level of the person who's asking it.
So, Gary, you spent some time about the corporate answer and something like that. And I know you've got several things on your bullet points. I won't get you off of that. But we do want to eventually get to what engineers need to do to improve their skills. So, Gary, why don't you go on with your list, your bullet points, things that are important for an engineer to create or save his job.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Kirk. And let me say one more thing on the email thing, because I can see this will become a topic on bulletin boards all over the world. But I don't require one of my engineers to answer me at 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, by the way. I don't require that. I don't necessarily expect it. All I'm saying is, if you happen to be a guy who is clearly working beyond 9 to 5 and you do respond and you're one of those people, it registers and, you know, it adds some credibility or a little bit of a star, if you will, to my, mental note of where you stand, and probably to your coworkers and even the folks up and down the line in the regional chain. It's not required. It's just a good thing to do, I think, if you can. I have several engineers who email me at 11 o'clock. I've got some guys, I don't know what they're doing and I don't want to know, but they email me at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and my computer's usually near the bed on the floor, and I'll hear that little Outlook ping. And occasionally, if I'm not too tired and I happen to hear it, I'll wake up, and I sometimes respond to those guys if I can. And, you know, part of my thought on that, too, is if my guys are up late and they're working, or they just got back from a transmitter site and then they want to respond to some email, can't get to bed, whatever the reason, if I respond to them, I feel like they also know that I'm in the trenches with them working late as well. In other words, how would they feel if their head of engineering never responded to an email after 5:30 p.m. while they're out there cranking them at 8 or 9 o'clock or 10 or 11 at night. So I just wanted to say that so everybody understands it's not a really requirement or an expectation or a cumulus policy. It's just one of those things. If we're talking about, gee, you know, how do you keep your job, or how do you grow, or how do you get better at what you're doing and get those opportunities to get better at what you're doing? You know, that's just one thing. Now, on my list, I have some other things. One, and here's another, but and we've sort of touched upon this, but be a team player. Be a great department head at your radio station. Be a person that is liked by most. In this world, it's not easy to be liked by everybody. That's a tough thing to do. Try to do it, but realize not everybody's going to like you. There will occasionally be personality conflicts. It's bound to be. That's okay. And I get that, by the way. I don't look down on or badly on any engineer, or really any employee that doesn't get along with everybody. Frankly, if you're getting along with everybody, you might actually be doing something wrong depending on what your position in the company is. You know how that old saying goes, you know, if everybody likes you, you must not be a great manager. I mean, you're too buddy-buddy or too friendly with everybody. But do your best to be generally liked by most people. And certainly somebody that even the people that don't always agree with you, is they feel that you are somebody they can approach and at least work with, not somebody that they have to absolutely avoid. Don't be that person. There are those people. Those people do get talked about, and ultimately that sort of thing gets factored into the decision of whether you get cut or you're kept or you're reprimanded. Luckily, I have had very few circumstances where I've needed to do that with an engineer. It's never gotten to that level. Typically, we can intervene and get involved with that. But be a team player. Be a good guy and be a department head. Go to those department head meetings. Contribute to those meetings. Do your best to say yes rather than no. And this is also common sense, and all of us that are engineers have talked about this at a convention or at dinner one time or another. We all know this. Don't be the person that always is finding a way not to do something. You know, you don't want to say, oh, I don't know if we can do that. Oh, I don't know if we can afford that. Boy, that's going to be really complicated. Wow, that's going to require a lot of work. Oh, we don't have that equipment. A corporate would never approve that. Can't tell you how many times a manager's called me to say, I was in a meeting with my engineer, and I asked him about X, Y, and Z, and he said we really couldn't do that because corporate wouldn't approve that or approve that expense. And I would say, easily 75% of the time, whatever that issue happened to be is something that, in fact, we could approve and would approve. And so try not to be the negative guy. Try not to be the one that gets the reputation for always finding a way to poo-poo something. That will go a long way for you. And sometimes we don't even realize, you know, in fact, that we're doing it. We don't necessarily mean to do it. A lot of us as engineers are critical thinkers, want everything to be right to a fault. We want everything to be so perfect that if we don't think it can be, we'll jump in and we'll talk about all of the things we need to do or have all the ducks we need to have in a row before some event can take place or some remote can happen at a certain location that we've not done it at before. Be careful about that. Think about that, because the people that are not technical, to Tom's point, you know, they may not understand where you're coming from. They hear, wow, this person never, you know, wants to do something. This person always has a reason why it can't be done. But the engineer is really thinking, I do want it to be done. I want it to be perfect, except I want all these things handled. Sometimes it's better to just stay quiet on those things, get them figured out in the background, and just make it happen, and you'll look like a hero. Communication skills is on my list. I think we've already covered that. I think that's pretty obvious. You want to have great communication skills to the best of your ability, both verbal and written, even body language. A lot of times, I think we don't pay attention to our body language and the things that we're doing and the movement that we're making. Body language is something that, you know, remember, you're a market manager. And if you don't have a market manager, you might have a general sales manager or an operations director that you report to. Most of those people, not all, but most, have come from a sales background. What do they train them in sales? If they're a seasoned sales professional, like most of your market managers are going to be, they'll have had sales experience. They learn how to read body language. I've had a number of conversations with market managers over the years who judge, you know, body language and have things to say to me about their engineer based on that, which an engineer probably doesn't realize. Like, you know, he doesn't really look, he doesn't seem involved in the meetings. He doesn't look up. You know, he waves his hands around a lot. He scares some people, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, in most cases, I have found that the engineer was okay. They just didn't, you know, quote unquote, you know, get the engineer, and I intervene and we work it out. But again,
Those are in the situations where I haven't made aware of it. There are probably situations that go on day in and day out all over the country at radio stations all over where those things are being thought, but those aren't being communicated up or down the chain. And that engineer is just sort of, you know, getting by, and he may never get promoted. He may not ever get a raise someday. He may not even have his job. He might be replaced. So things to think about. Proficiency. Another item is proficiency. And again, this is all very common sense stuff that I'm sure most people that are watching this podcast understand. They get it. But let's go through it again, because sometimes it's good to hear. Be proficient. Be proficient in studio work and audio work and consoles. Be proficient in IT. Yes, we have all said it a million times. IT is pretty much the way radio and broadcast and engineering's headed, right? It is very little RF anymore, and it's mostly IT. It's IP, it's audio over IP, it's Ethernet. Pretty much every device we have in the studio is controlled via Ethernet. All the computers, all the networking, all the printers, all the email, all the websites, all the streaming, even transmitters today are coming along with Ethernet connections. Everything is about IT, and not just basic IT, not just how do I load Windows 7, or how do I update Windows Vista, or how do I add a printer driver? It's also about how do I program a switch? Do I know any Cisco commands? Do I know any firewall commands? Do I know how to properly ensure that my firewall is securing my building? Do I know how to manage bandwidth? Do I know how to assign priorities to bandwidth? Do I understand subnets? These are the things, the more advanced things, which almost today aren't even advanced. They're almost commonplace, but for many people, that would be considered advanced. Are you up to speed on those things? Do you know enough to at least communicate with the contractor that comes in to do work in your building, or with one of your regional IT, you know, managers? Are you competent enough to have that discussion? I interview a lot of engineers who want jobs that can't get past basic networking skills. When I'm trying to figure out whether I can hire you or not, it is of concern to me if you do not have enough IT skill, because the more IT skill you have, the less outside contract engineering I have. And what does that mean? That means I can maybe pay you more. You're probably asking for a good salary. And you know what? I may be able to pay more of it if I have to pay less of it, budgetarily speaking, to an outside person. Frankly, I'd rather give it to somebody that I know than somebody I don't know. Be proficient in RF. I said there's less RF out there, but there still is RF, right? We all have transmitters. It's the only way our signal gets on the air outside of streaming and all the other new technologies. And you need to know how to do that. Transmitters today obviously are much more modern. It's more about, you know, it's less about component level, you know, troubleshooting, except in the case of our older transmitters. If you have a 20 or 30 year old transmitter, you're probably doing some component level troubleshooting. But if it's 15 years or newer, you may have a solid state transmitter. You probably have a very, very sophisticated exciter in your chain. Those have less component level troubleshooting issues, and they're more about boards or more about having to send them back. But know your RF, know your basics, know your HeliACs, know about your antenna, know how to read VisWire, know the trouble signs. We have enough engineers at Cumulus, all within a few hours of most of our stations, you know, for any market or station we're in, with the exception of, let's say, California or Colorado or North Dakota. Most of our other markets have another engineer in another Cumulus market within anywhere from 3 to 5 hours drive. If you get a little bit in over your head, or you need a second person to help you, or you're a very seasoned pro, but some transmitter problem is just absolutely escaping you, and tech support from, you know, Harris or BE or Nortel are not able to help you solve the problem, we can send somebody in to help you. And if you're a younger engineer and we're looking to hire you, and you are not A+ on RF, but you know how to change a tube, and you've had some experience, and I don't feel that you're going to hurt yourself when you're out there at 3 a.m. because it is high voltage, then, you know, I give that a little less weight. But know your RF. The more proficient you are at it, the better you are. Be good at budgeting. You know, here's another part.
Let's pause there for just a second. Yeah. I want to give a couple other guys a chance to get a question in. And by the way, I want to mention something I didn't introduce about Gary at the beginning of the show, was that Gary is the recipient of Radio World Magazine's Excellence in Engineering Award that's given to, as far as I know, just one engineer per year. Obviously, Gary is just hammering, machine gunning a lot of ideas and a lot of points here. They're all important, and agree or disagree with all of them, I think overall you'll find that, that Gary's outlook and his leadership abilities are really there. And Gary has been there in the trenches. He's been on towers. He's been inside transmitters. He's been under audio consoles. He's installed and fixed all this kind of stuff. Gary, you said something a few minutes ago that just kind of made me think. You know, a lot of us who got into engineering got into it because we didn't want to deal with people. We would rather deal with a transmitter than deal with a person. I mean, I won't go through the whole details, but when I was a youngster and when I was in my teenage years, I had a terrible speech impediment. I couldn't talk to other people, yet I could talk to a microphone because that wasn't a person. So that's why I got into radio, because I couldn't talk to people. And then from there, I decided I liked engineering. So I got into engineering because I didn't have to deal with people. Well, guess what? Almost anything you do, and you're going to be successful at, no matter what it is, you're going to be more successful if you can deal with people. And a lot of that involves, hey, looking in the mirror and see, now how can I maybe be a little bit better? How can I improve my service to other people so that I'll eventually improve my stature, my position, where I'm going, have people on my side supporting me when the time comes. And the other thought I had, Gary, was you just mentioned about if you're an engineer and you mentioned it earlier, being a team player. And it made me think that that includes the other way. Being a team player doesn't always mean offering to help or offering to stand up and do something. It also means being able to ask for help. Would you agree with that? And that related, I guess, to the story you just mentioned about engineers, if they don't know what to do or not getting the help they need, ask for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't be more correct. And asking for help covers a couple of different bases. One, as you just pointed out, that is another way to be seen as a team player. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with saying, gee, I don't know. That was mentioned a few minutes ago on this show. Gee, I don't know, and I'll get back to you. It's okay not to know. It's not okay to say you know when you don't know. It's okay to not know. It's not okay to not know most of the time on areas you ought to know about that you are supposedly proficient at, okay? So it's not like it's okay to never know anything. You don't get away with that. But it's occasionally all right to not know. And in fact, I'm leery of people that always know the answer to everything. We've met people like that. Absolutely, sure, ask for help. The other thing that not asking for help could do, and from, you know, where I sit, you know, running a whole bunch of stuff at the company and responsible for budgets, if you don't ask for help when you should be asking for help, what else is likely to happen? Well, there's a good chance that whatever you're not asking for help on is one of a couple of things can happen. One, that item's not going to get fixed. Maybe that transmitter runs at 65% because you're afraid to ask for help on how to raise the power. You just can't figure out how to retune that transmitter or what problem occurred in the IPA that you haven't tackled yet. You're afraid. That station might run at low power for a long time. What does that do? That costs money. That conceivably could cost money. Less signal, less coverage, less distribution means less revenue potentially when your ratings start to dip. That's a problem. Yeah. By not asking for help, you may also endanger equipment. Something may run to the point where now you have a burnout or a flameout. And what does that cost? What does it cost to change coax? I don't know, $30,000, $20,000, $60,000, depending on the size and how much you have. Not asking can cost a company money. So we definitely don't want people that are not asking. But you're right. It's also about being, a good a team player. Frankly, I love it when people ask questions. You know, we aren't doing this year, but in years past at Cumulus, we've taken, you know, anywhere from 15 or so engineers to the NAB, and budgets have cut that back a little bit this year. We won't have quite that many, but we will have some guys there. But one of the things that the engineers have always loved, and I guess you could say this happens at an SBE meeting or any number of gatherings that engineers, you know, are lucky enough to attend or fortunate enough to attend, is that they love sharing stories and sharing knowledge and communicating and asking questions and getting answers. I think we all feel better when we do that, and we also feel great when we're able to give information to somebody. So I couldn't agree with you more on that. Before I go on, are there other questions? I don't want to.
I want to bring Chris Tobin in. He's been on the sidelines here a bit, and Chris works in a large market at CBS Radio. He's got to be a team player. Chris, I wonder what comments you might have on what Gary has said so far, and if you've got any questions for what Gary might be addressing in the rest of the show.
Oh, Gary's definitely on point on everything he said. I would just add to it, what I find works very well in my career over the last 20-plus years and working with others, dress the part of a professional. Yes, you may have to work in racks. You may have to do things, the transmitter, rooftop, STL shacks, whatever. Do what I do, and then keep disposable overalls in your office or your locker, whatever it may be. So if you have to do some dirty work and you're somewhat dressed up, put on the disposable overalls, do your work, toss them out or save them if you didn't tear them, and you're off and running. But you present yourself in a proper way. I find that when I walk around the office in a button-down shirt, tie, depending on meetings, that I get much better response from the non-technical people, if you will, managers and all the other folks, and it works really well. Attend meetings. Go ahead.
You wear a tuxedo to work. I've seen you.
What can I tell you? We have a very highbrow operation.
Actually, I do know an engineer. I won't say his name because I'm not thinking of it right now, but a very well-respected guy. And he would wear a suit and tie to work every day. And in the car and in the shop, he would have some coveralls. Whenever he had to get under something, he'd just throw that coverall on, zip it up, and he'd work on whatever he had to work on. He might take the jacket off, you know. And then when he was done, off the coveralls would come, and his suit and tie back on, and nobody was the wiser in the front office.
Yes, no, absolutely. Another thing to consider, and this I've been doing for a long time, works really well, is make your rounds. It's like a doctor in a hospital. Go to all the different departments, check on people. Remember maybe last week you helped somebody with a phone issue. Check in on them. See how they're doing. Is the phone working? Voicemail? Somebody has a studio issue. A business office had a problem with a printer. Just pop in. And I'm telling you, that can go 200% in your favor. You want credits. You want points. You can't go wrong because you're in their view. They're always remembering you, and you'll be first top of mind when there's a problem. They're going to come to you, and you know there's less chance of somebody at the upper end, higher up, saying, "Well, you know, what does this guy do?" Most people say, "Oh, I see him every day. He does this. He does that. This is great." You have a better chance of surviving the jungle.
You know, Chris Tarr is not on the show tonight, but he is in the chat room, and he says, "Yeah, but I spend most of my day crawling around." So that's probably true. I certainly have spent a lot of my days in engineering crawling around. And no, don't wear a suit on those days. Goodness gracious. And you know what? I never did actually wear a suit to clients. But, you know, I'd have either nice jeans or press pants. And usually I would have a shirt that got pressed. Yeah, it costs $1.75 a day to wear a pressed shirt. But, you know, it they last longer if you wash them that way. Hey, let's get back to Gary Klein. Gary, you were going to talk next about budgeting. And somehow that's a subject that I often was able to avoid in my engineering duties at radio stations. What do your engineers have to do in terms of budgeting?
Absolutely. I'll answer that. But let me just first say, before I get into budgeting, I actually had on my list a couple of things that were just mentioned. One is, you know, making the rounds. I couldn't agree more with that. I personally, in my own job, do that every day. I make it a point to make the rounds and chat with a couple of different people around the office. Sometimes I'll actually go out of my way to talk to people that I normally don't talk to just to see how they're doing or say hello or follow up. As the example was just given, on a particular problem that I didn't even handle, but I maybe saw the ticket system. Maybe somebody's desktop wasn't working right. I'll actually go out of my way to say, did my guys get that taken care of for you? Are you okay? Most of the time they say yes. Sometimes they say, well, they did, but there's this one other problem. I'll say, I'll tell you what, I'll make sure somebody comes up within a few minutes or sometime today and we'll get that taken care of for you. I couldn't agree more, and I couldn't agree more on the clothing. Absolutely. Dress as best as you can, but also keep this in mind. If you do wear a suit and tie to work every day, you do risk you risk somebody thinking, wow, they're not getting their hands dirty. So how hard are they working? So it's a double-edged sword, but absolutely, at least at a minimum business casual, unless you're going to the transmitter, you're going out to a swamp, the idea of having extra clothing or different types of clothing is excellent, but you absolutely are judged, believe it or not, on, again, body language, the way you appear, your hygiene. Remember, many of the people in your building are account execs. They are trained and they are expected to dress and be polished all the time. So to the best of your ability that you can do that, I absolutely recommend it. Now, on budgeting, yes, absolutely. That was on one of my lists about being proficient. You should know how to budget. You should know how to work a spreadsheet. Kirk, your question was, what do my guys have to do with budgeting? Well, what they do with budgeting is a little different than what I do. Although in some cases, I guess we share something in common. Ultimately, I'm trying to figure out how it all funnels up through the top and then back down in terms of managing, you know, what our expectations are from our board and from, you know, what maybe we've reported to Wall Street, and also making sure, you know, from my perspective, that we're staying under budget, and that in fact, if as we get through the year, we find that we've had a couple extra large repairs or other unexpected items, that I'm extra careful to make sure that we somehow manage throughout the rest of the year to not go over budget. Now, that's an operating budget. There's also a capital budget, which is, you know, has different constraints on it, and I manage that a little bit differently. But as a market engineer, you know, we expect you to do a couple of things. One, and this is what I tell my guys, it may be different at other radio companies. One, I just had a call a few weeks ago with all of my regional engineers, and I reminded them that, you know, at any given time, I expect them to know what they need to budget for their department year round. Somebody had made a comment to me that was something along the lines of, well, we didn't get a lot of notice, you know, for budgeting, and you know, or so-and-so didn't get a lot of notice for budgeting from the business manager. They didn't have necessarily enough time to prepare, you know, all of the things they needed to prepare. And my response was, always be prepared. You should always know what it costs to run your department. You don't need to wait till October, November, or whenever your budgeting season is to figure that out. If, for instance, you have some unexpected repairs, like a tower that needs to be painted, maybe that's a $20,000 tower painting bill that you're going to have, you should know about that. The minute you know that you have something that needs to be done, get a quote or two. Maybe it won't get approved that week, unless it's an emergency, of course. And maybe it'll have to wait till budget time. And maybe that quote will have to be updated later in the year. But have some sense of what it takes to run your department, both with the expected and unexpected. Always keep a running tab on your department spending. If you don't have a good way to do that, your business manager or CFO or somebody in your company, I guarantee you, tracks spending by department code. Most of us are pretty computerized these days, even in small markets. And somebody's got a tab on what's being allocated to your maintenance and repair budget, your tower budget, your tube budget, your telecom budget. Somewhere, somebody's got that. Ask for it every month. In other words, in February, probably by the first or second week of February, they've closed out January, get the January report. Have some sense of what your department costs to run. Have some sense, not just some sense, have a sense of whether you're within budget, and where you are to last year's budget. Did I spend more or less this January than last January? Where am I at to January's budget for 2010? And how am I through the entire year's budget? Each month may have a different amount that was budgeted, so you'll have to take a look at that. But know what that takes, and always be prepared. If somebody walks in your office tomorrow and says, okay, what are the items that, you know, you would need to budget for next year or for next mm-hmm. quarter? Be prepared. You know, the way companies are running today, some people are running with, you know, what I would call variable budgets, whereby budgets are being put together, but then as business picks up or does not pick up, budgets may be adjusted, maybe on a quarterly basis. So they might come to you in a couple of months and say, okay, just so you know, business hasn't been that great. We're going to have to tighten our belt even more. You should be prepared for that to happen. You should know how you're going to do that. Don't be the person that, you know, overspends your budget routinely, and don't be the person that says, if at all possible, don't be this person. Gee, I don't know how we're going to get by. There's just no way. Figure that out. Have advanced knowledge. Always be thinking. The other thing that I expect our engineers to do, besides understanding what the numbers are behind the numbers, is to be proficient enough to put that together in an Excel, for instance, spreadsheet in a comprehensive manner, such that that can be turned in when it does turn out to be budgeting season. Some companies already have forms or online tracking systems where it saves you time and you don't necessarily have to create your own spreadsheet. But you should be able to do that as well. So be able to budget, and budget yourself like a department. It's a good thing to do. Leadership. Be able to be a leader. It's another thing on my list. You may or may not be in a position in your market or in your company to have to lead or supervise other people. Let's put that into two categories. One, you are in a position to manage other people. Maybe you're a two engineering shop or a three person engineering shop or a four person or one and a half. Maybe you just manage contract people. I don't know. Or maybe you're a regional engineer and you manage, you know, 30 or 40 people, whatever it happens to be. And this is TV, radio, satellite. I don't care where you're working. But if you're in a position to manage other people, have good leadership skills. Know how to manage people. Know how to get the most productivity out of them, be somebody that they want to aspire, to somebody that they respect, somebody that they want to follow and lead, somebody that they will go the extra mile for, somebody that you know, they know that they can count on you. Be a good person, be a good leader, take care of that person, do what you can to get them, any raises or bonuses that might ever, you know, be available in your budget.
you know, be able to be the person to give them praise, be the person that doesn't always have to take credit for everything. Give your guys credit. You know, often on our corporate team and throughout the company, I not only thank and give praise to our hardworking engineers that are out there, but many times I or their market managers will copy several key executives in the company and give so-and-so a pat on the back. Just today, one of our engineers couple of days ago drove, and it's a long drive from Iowa to North Dakota to fix a transmitter, worked till 5 o'clock in the morning, got it back to full power. I sent an email to a couple of key executives, you know, letting them know how hard he worked and what he did. And, you know, he got some attaboys. And I think it's important that you do that. Also, another thing that I think is very important, not only for my job, but I think for other people as well, is, and you may not often think about this, but the ability to sell. Now, you may not be the person that goes out and sells advertising to the community where your station is located, but you should still know how to sell. And I don't necessarily mean advertising, but you should know how to sell an idea, to sell a project, to sell a budget, to sell a proposal. If you're going in to pitch a new telecom company, if you're going to pitch a new telephone system, if you're going to ask for a new transmitter, if you're going to ask for that tower painting, if you're going to ask for a raise, if you're going to ask for a new employee or an extra employee or contract labor to help you build out a studio, I don't know, even if you're going to ask for a day off, be the person that can sell whoever you're talking to. If it's your market manager, learn how to sell him or her. Learn how to read that person. Learn what their hot buttons are. Learn what's important to them. Learn how to communicate with them. Learn how to communicate with everybody you run into. I tell you that I consider much of what I do every day as a selling job. I'm routinely selling ideas and concepts and you know, thoughts to the people that I work with. Of course, what I do is generally on a larger level. When I sell an idea or a method or a concept on, say, how we're going to do video streaming, that affects hundreds of stations. But even at your own local radio station, you may be selling the idea of a new PA system for a remote. You may be selling them on the need for new digital audio consoles, or it's already been decided that you're going to get new consoles because you're moving to a new studio location, but you want to sell them on one brand or another, or one concept or another. Maybe you're going to sell them on some concept that costs more than another concept, and they know that, but you need to sell them on why it's okay to spend more money. I mean, this is what your vendors are doing to you. They're telling you why, for instance, it's more important to do something, but how are you going to sell that to the people that you work with? And so it's important to know how to sell. I hear somebody saying yes. I guess they agree with me on that.
Oh, that's me. That's Kirk. I'm agreeing with you. Especially on the console, since I work for the folks at Axia IP Audio. So we're in sales mode all the time. You mentioned, Gary, you often have to sell something, whether it's just the idea of getting this or a PA system for the remote set. I've got a few things that I'm trying to sell my boss on doing, some things for the NAB show where Telos is going to be, and some people to help me out with some sales in parts of the world where we don't have anybody yet. I'm trying to sell an idea to my wife. Hey, honey, let's go to New York City and you can do this while I do that. It'll be good for both of us. So yeah, we're always in, as human beings, we're in that mode of always selling something, even if we're just selling an idea to ourselves. So that's not a bad thing. It's what we're doing to increase our position or help make life easier in the long run for us by trying to get what we want. Gary, we're actually going to be out of time here very shortly. Were there any couple last parting comments you'd like to chat about, and then we'll take a couple of questions from Tom and from Chris.
Thanks. A funny thing. This is the truth. Here's my phone right here. I just got a text message from, I won't name him, but a major vendor who just sent me a text message that said, sell, sell, sell. So obviously we have vendors watching, and I guess they agree with me on the idea to sell. So I thought that was kind of funny. A few other things, just a couple other things on adding value as an engineer. Here are some things that you can do to help your position with your radio station, your company, and to be looked upon favorably. Add some value by doing these things. Cut expenses. Figure out different ways that you can cut expenses. For instance, in telecom, when's the last time you reviewed your telephone bill and your internet bill? I've seen even our smaller markets at Cumulus, by a quick review and a renegotiation with your current provider or different provider, I've found ways to easily, minimally save $1,000 a month or 12 grand a year. You can save much more than that. I've saved much more than that in the larger markets. But
When's the last time you took a review? It's amazing how well you can do with that and how happy your market manager will be when you tell him or her that you can do that. Repairs. Watch every expense, but figure out a way to do more preventative maintenance such that your repair bills go down. And nobody likes surprises. So to the best of your ability that you can tell and inform the people that you work with, expenses coming down the pike, the less surprised there will be and the better they will feel. So if you think there's a tube that's going soft, or you think that there's a module that you're going to need for your audio console, or if you think a new hub or switch is going to be needed because there have been a lot of pesky, intermittent connection problems in the building, give them as much advance warning as you can and do a great job of researching the prices. Walk in there with two or three quotes so they understand to the depth that you've went to save money for them. Those things matter a lot. Stay on top of technology. Read every day. Obviously, if you're watching this, you care about technology. You want to know what's going on, and you want to hear different people give different opinions on different topics that are relevant to you. But read, read Radio World, read BE Radio, read the internet, Google different topics, read PC, the PC magazines. Stay on top of technology and read vendor announcements. Take a look at the different vendor websites from time to time and get up to speed on the latest technology and things they're introducing. If there's any way you can get to the NAB, I recommend it. If not the NAB, the radio show. If not that, an SBE meeting where vendors come in many times to talk about new technologies. If not that, your local broadcaster, state broadcaster show. Read the bulletin boards on the internet. Obviously, watch this tweet episode and all of the others. This is number 22, so that must mean there's 21 before this one. Yep. Watch or listen to all 21. But stay on top of technology. I think those are the key things. I think I've covered off on most of the things that come to mind right off the top of my head.
Let's bring Tom Ray in. Tom, what are your thoughts on people, engineers being kept or keeping your job safe? I know you've got a few engineers who work for you at Buckley.
I mean, Gary's hit on pretty much all the key points. Make yourself valuable. Show your value to your employer. What can you do for them? It's not all about it, every time. It's not all about what they can do for you. It's what you can do for them to make people's lives easier, or lives easier around the station. Gary's right. And try and anticipate those expenses so there's no surprises. I mean, a lightning strike in the middle of summer, hey, it happens. And I'm sure people understand that. But, if you do have a tube that's going south, don't all of a sudden need a tube or be off the air and say, oh yeah, by the way, that never goes over well. Read a lot. He's right. Radio World. Go online with the internet nowadays. You can go online and read manuals from equipment you don't have.
Oh my gosh! I think 90% of my education came from reading Radio World from cover to cover. This was back in the mid 80s and early 90s, cover to cover, and then also picking up every manual for every piece of equipment and reading the whole thing from cover to cover.
And that's what we did. Yeah. And you read all that stuff, but yeah. Go to an SBE meeting. Call up a couple engineers or other guys in town. Go out and have lunch. Shoot the bull. God knows what may come out of that. That's how you learn. That's how you keep current. And that's how you keep your foot in the game. And that's what it's all about these days.
How about you, Chris Tobin, New York City? If you work with people. I don't know if you have any reports or not, but I know you report to somebody.
I report to people, but I have no one reporting to me. But I do work. I do oversee a staff of folks to keep everything in order. I guess the best thing to say is keep ahead of anything that could possibly go wrong. In transmitters, check your tubes. If it's solid state, make sure all the voltages are where they should be. Technology-wise, yes, Radio World is definitely a good source. The internet is the best. I budget most of the time 30 minutes a day at the computer and just start going through stuff, looking up topics, double-checking a few things I may have heard about, and then finding websites that I can just listen to podcasts, if you will, and check on things throughout the week. You have to self-educate. There is no way you're going to just walk into a place, someone's going to pay you and go, here you go, here's 4 hours of training and off you go. And Gary's right. The NAB, find a way to go. I do it every year on my own dime. It's worth it. You can't go wrong. I mean, you really can't go wrong.
And as Gary mentioned, listen to this podcast. There are others, too, on the Twit Network. My goodness, I have heard every episode of Security Now and most of the This Week in Tech episodes. You can learn a lot on Security Now from Steve Gibson and Leo both. So I sure would recommend that. I think the bottom line is be interested. Smile. Eat right, get some sleep, and you know, be interested in what your career is, because your career may depend upon you being interested in it. Gary, I'll give you the last word on the subject.
Thanks. There's one other thing I want to say, because this entire broadcast has been all about what an engineer could or should do. I also want to say that it's also fair for an engineer to expect certain things in return. And this is very important to me, and something I think all of my engineers know that I back up and every day with the discussions that I have with them and with managers throughout our company as necessary. I think engineers also have a right to feel, assuming they've earned it, to be respected, to be, you know, treated with respect, to be looked at if they've done all the right things as a professional and treated as such. I think engineers are obviously in enough cases that I'll mention it, are not given all the credit they're due. They're very hardworking. They, you know, very few people understand all of the things that they do and all of the hours that they put in. And I think every one of them out there deserves to be recognized for that. And in our company and in our culture, you know, we feel that it's important that happens. So while we've spoken all night about it, and I've spoken all night about everything I think an engineer ought to do or could do to keep their job or get promoted or be more proficient or maybe jump to another job in another company to hire. You know, sometimes we have to leave our own company to take another job. There isn't the position you want available in your company, and you move on, you know, and then you maybe sometimes you move back, but now you're at a higher level. Anyway, I think everybody deserves to be treated with respect and recognized for what they do, and it's very important. And on occasion, you know, sometimes a manager isn't recognizing an engineer or properly communicating with an engineer. That can happen. It's not all one way. And sometimes when that does happen, I am happy. That's part of my job, is to intervene or get involved and try to get everybody on the same page. So I just want to leave on that parting note that it's not all one way. It is a two-way street, and good, hardworking engineers that are proficient, that care about their job, and who are people that you can get along with and that are team players, and that also it's clearly evident that they respect their profession and treat it as such, much like you feel great about a doctor who's very accomplished, and you can tell that they, you know, or an auto mechanic or any profession, or an optometrist or a plumber, it doesn't matter. You can tell that they've been doing it a long time, and they absolutely get what they're doing, and they care very much about it. You respect that person. And I think for engineers that fall into that same category, that they absolutely deserve that respect. And at our company, that's, you know, our culture, that's my culture. And that's something that I want to say before we go. So it doesn't sound like it's all about what do you have to do to make somebody else happy.
And on that note, we are going to wrap up the show because it's time to go. So thanks very much for joining us. And I want you to be sure to listen in for the next few weeks, because we're going to do these foundational series shows on amplitude modulation, frequency modulation, digital transmission modulation and transmitting techniques. We'll do something about antennas too, AM, FM antennas and antennas for other frequencies. How do we best get signals into the air and out of the air? Plus analog and digital audio series as well. So stay tuned for those. We're going to be doing them. They may be interspersed with a few other guest appearances. Gary Klein, thanks for joining us. We sure appreciate you tuning in or coming into us from Atlanta. Thanks very much.
Thank you. It was great to be here. And anytime you want me back, I'm happy to do it.
And Chris Tobin from Manhattan, thank you for being with us as well. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Hope to see you live next week at the former Z100 studios. Yes. And also Tom Ray from Hudson Valley. Thanks for braving the traffic and getting up there just in time, Tom.
Oh, it was a bear tonight, and I'd like to thank Gary for being here. It's always good to have him, and I can't wait for, you know, the foundation series, because I'd like to know how some of this stuff works, too.
You're going to be teaching some of it, Tom. Come on.
Me? Oh, okay, yeah, I will.
Yeah, you. All right, be sure you make your comments on thisweekinradiotech.com. You can make a comment on this particular episode, or you can also go to the Speak Up forum and leave your comments there as to who you think we should have as guests and topics that we should cover. You can subscribe in the iTunes store if you like. We also have an RSS feed button right on the front page of the homepage at thisweekinradiotech.com. Thanks to the folks at the Twit Network, John, for switching the show. Appreciate you very much. That's it for this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store.
Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here.
Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.